The Money Show.
Investment School.
Investment School brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School MBA. An MBA that opens a digital world of opportunities. Discover more at www.jbs.johannesburgbusinessschool.ac.za. And with us this evening, Senior Strategist and Advisor at ETFSA, Noreena Fisser, Head Teacher in the Investment School, understanding asset classes for your portfolio. But not just that, how to balance asset classes and why that is important. Noreena Fisser, before we do anything fancy, asset classes, just broadly speaking, explain what these things are, please.
Good evening, Bruce, and good evening to your listeners. Asset classes, I think it is one of those pieces of terminology that gets thrown around in the investment industry without due regard for what people think they are. I like to think in terms of asset classes as just different groups of investment opportunities that would give you different payoff profiles. What I mean with that is what sort of return would I expect from a particular asset class? Now, returns are made up of changes in prices, things that we would refer to as capital gains. And on the other side, you might have an income component, which could be dividends or it could be interest. Now, when we talk asset classes, probably the three primary ones that get used is equities. Equities also referred to as shares or stocks, or that's really buying a portion of a company, of a listed company. The second one would be bonds. Now, bonds are also sometimes referred to as fixed income securities, because they do provide exactly what it says, a fixed income security. And then I guess cash probably is the third of sort of prominent asset class that we refer to. But if you think about it, cash really also would be a form of a fixed income security. The big difference between bonds and cash is that in the case of cash, there's no potential change in terms of the price. So that capital part is necessarily static. There's only the interest income that you would receive. Whereas in the case of bonds, there would be a big chunk of interest, but there is also the potential for some changes in price and therefore some capital gains or losses. Did I go too deep into the jargon again?
No. That's difficult to avoid, and I will reel you in as and when and if necessary. It's very seldom necessary, Noreena. But even within those three big broad asset classes, can we go deeper into it? Can we go equities are actually made up of their asset classes within asset classes? Cash is cash, which is nice and simple. And there may even be asset classes, different bond classes as well.
Yes. Now, so let's maybe start with bonds, because that might be a smaller differentiation. So typically within bonds as an asset class, we could differentiate between fixed interest securities or even floating rate securities. And as the name suggests, it means that the amount of interest that you would get in a floating rate instrument would vary over time. But there could also be the differentiation between the government bonds and then corporate bonds, and somewhere in between you'd also find, call it parastatal bonds, or the bonds of our state-owned enterprises. Another area of differentiation within bonds would be the difference between, call it nominal or normal sort of bonds, and then there's also the potential for inflation-linked bonds.
Oh, right.
So these are all nuances in terms of within bonds as an asset class, different types of fixed income or interest exposure that one would get just in bonds as an asset class.
All right. So, and cash is cash. Cash is the simplest of the lot, right? But even with that, you could have money sitting in your current account getting you no interest. You could have you could put your money into a fixed deposit, perhaps. I mean, there are different ways of looking after cash.
Sure, but the difference there would really just be the amount of interest that you would get. Right. Other than that, cash is cash. So it's really just the level of interest rate. A fixed deposit, one would typically expect, is going to pay you a higher interest rate, because really the bank or the institution to whom you are giving your money has got the use of your money for the period of the fixed deposit. And therefore, they'd be prepared to pay you a bit more money, a higher interest rate for that, because they, of course, in turn can take your money and lend it to someone else and get some interest income for that. So that's, but yeah, pretty much cash is cash.
All right. Cash is cash. And then equities, if you thought the bond explanation was complicated, equities then are into is the best way to divide them up into sectors. You might have technology shares, you might have banking shares, insurance shares, or maybe you'll have financial services shares, and they are further divided into banking and insurance, short term and long term. It starts getting, you can chop and change quite a lot.
Absolutely. So certainly sector classifications would be one way of delineating within the equity space. I think maybe a more appropriate or a regular one for us that we would look at is the geography of where these shares are located. So mostly in South Africa, as a South African investor, you would be buying shares in companies that are listed on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. So SA equities, if I can call it that. But then, of course, there's also a significant range of global equities, companies that are listed on any of the number of stock exchanges around the world, whether that is in developed markets such as the US or the UK, Europe, Australia, Japan even, or it could be the stock exchanges of emerging markets, China, India, Brazil, Russia, etc. Of course, South Africa is also an emerging market, but for us living here in South Africa, that's really considered our domestic market, our home market. And then there's also stock exchanges in frontier markets, maybe elsewhere in Africa. So I think the geographic definition of different equities are probably an even more important differentiation for investors than before we even get to sector exposures, as you mentioned, you know, financials or technology shares or healthcare or maybe mining companies or whatever. But both of those certainly are important sub-classifications within equity as an asset class.
Phew. Narina, again, what we're trying to do is understand and simplify. So we're going to, in a moment, then pull all of that together and say to you, right, now, how then, if you've got 100 rand, do you split that 100 rand amongst all of those options? And how much do you think about it? How much do you overthink it, underthink it? In a moment, Narina Fisser, strategist and advisor at ETFSA. More with her in just a bit.
The Money Show. Investment School.
Before touching base again with Narina Fisser at ETFSA, the National Prosecuting Authority is confirming this evening that the trial against the former Minister of Social Development will begin tomorrow. No, it'll begin tomorrow, the 24th of November, so that is tomorrow. Batabile Dlamini is standing trial over the claims that she failed in her duties to ensure that SASSA was equipped and ready to take over the paying of social grants. Remember, there was that invalid contract with Cash Paymaster Services came to an end. And was SASSA ready or not? And her behavior, her perjury charges for giving false evidence during inquiry into her role in that crisis. So she's accused of giving false evidence. She's accused of perjury in that matter. Let's see whether or not it actually does go to trial, or we get, in the tradition of South Africa's judicial system, cases kicked down the road. That happens very, very often as well. Narina Fisser, strategist and advisor at ETFSA. It is possible, I think, to get a little bit too granular, especially for startups, for amateurs in the world of investing. You can overthink it. So you can take equities, cash and bonds, and you can slice and dice it and divvy it up into a million different pieces. And then really, I think, confound yourself with complexity where you actually don't need to do that, do you?
I fully agree. The term I like to use, Bruce, is the one of analysis paralysis. It's so easy to get to the point where you're doing so much research and so much overthinking that you paralyze yourself into inaction. And as far as I'm concerned, that's one of the biggest risks that one can take. You really should just try and keep it as simple as possible, especially when you start out and say, just start investing, just getting involved. And over time, your own learning and understanding will grow. I think maybe when we talk about the different asset classes, one of the easy ways to think about this in terms of what type of asset class would be appropriate for my investment requirements, it comes very much down to risk appetite, but specifically with risk appetite, I'm here referring to the time horizon that you have. The shorter time horizon you have, the less risk, the less variability you're able to take on in your investment portfolio. So if I'm going to be doing an investment, or I've got money that I need to use within 3 months or 6 months or even a year, I really cannot afford for variability in the value of that investment. So then I'm going to stick with cash. I only want the certainty of that interest rate that I will be getting. I can't afford to take the risk that the 100 Rand that I put in is not 100 Rand when I go back tomorrow or next week to get it. The next step, I think, in terms of risk, and I here specifically refer to risk as the variability. What proportion of my investment is exposed to something where the price can go up and down? So the next step would then be bonds. So if I've got a investment horizon of, let's say, up to 3 years, for example, I still want to earn a bigger proportion of my return from that interest income, but I'm prepared to take on a little bit of risk in terms of the price of that bond being allowed to go up and down. And so that would be an appropriate sort of prominent asset class in my investments if I'm looking at around about a three-year investment horizon. Much beyond 5 years, one would then start looking at equities in terms of your preferred asset class. Because in the case of equities, by far the biggest proportion of return that you will get will come from the capital portion, the fact that the price of this investment can go up and down. Yes, there could be some income as well in the form of dividends, for example. But over the longer term, you're going to find that your bigger return that you're going to get is going to come from the variability of the price. So that's usually the rule of thumb that I would use for clients to say that the shorter your time horizon, the shorter or the less amount of risk you can take on, risk translated here into variability. So I would start out with cash, then move into bonds or fixed interest investments, and ultimately then into equities.
And here's the thing, no, there's no one size fits all, is there, when it comes to, to balancing asset classes for a portfolio? And it really is quite a complex process. Is it one that is done on individual emotions and feelings? Is it one that we should just do based on age and a potential retirement date one day? Is it something we should do based on our horoscopes?
So yes, it is probably one of the most the things that can trip people up the most. I just want to, in terms of that last comment that you made there before we got to the horoscopes, I'm going to ignore that question, just take one step back and talk about this idea that risk or the amount of risk that we can take in a portfolio should be associated with our age. That is definitely flawed thinking. It should absolutely be tied to the time horizon of my investment. Because I might be a 28-year-old who has got an amount of money that I just want to put away for 2 years because I actually want to use it as a deposit for a house or to buy a new car or whatever the case might be. And then my time horizon and therefore my risk appetite would be very low. Or I could be a 70-year-old who has an amount of money available that I don't need for an income that I really want to leave as a legacy for my beneficiaries, for my children or whatever. And my time horizon for that really is extended. It could be 50 years or more, and therefore I can afford to take on a lot more risk with that. So we need to break this idea that it's our age that determines our risk profile. Rather, it is the investment objective, and with that then, the time horizon. But I do want to come back to the idea
pivotal distinctions. Pivotal distinctions. Sorry, Narina, carry on.
So I think wanted to go on to say, so how do I make this decision in terms of how much into each of these different asset classes? And because it isn't a one-size-fits-all or a simple decision, we actually find that the majority of investment funds in South Africa flow into what is called balanced funds or multi-asset portfolios. Now, that really is just, as the name says, multi-assets. It's got more than one asset class in it. It's typically a combination of equities, of bonds, and of cash, and some other things as well, but let's stick with those three for the time being. Now, what we find is that within the balanced fund or the multi-asset portfolio, there is three broad groupings, which typically would relate to the amount of equities or the amount of shares that there would be in such a portfolio. And so you're going to find a grouping that has got a high equity exposure, a group that's got a medium equity exposure, and one that has got a low equity exposure. And I think for many investors starting out, this really is one of the best ways to avoid trying to overthink this asset allocation decision. match their time horizon of their investment objective, therefore, with a low or a medium or a high risk profile, and then rather invest in a balanced fund or a multi-asset portfolio until such time, maybe, as you feel more comfortable trying to address this question of asset allocation yourself.
Yeah, and then, and I mean, you pay for the service of the of the balancing act, but for, for the vast majority of people, handing it over to a fund manager to get it as right as possible, because nobody's going to get this 100% right, is an appropriate action. However, if you are somebody who really resents paying the fees that a fund manager earns, and you wanted to do this via exchange-traded funds, is it the sort of thing that one could do for oneself if one wanted to do it?
Absolutely. You know, and a good starting point would be to say, what is the typical asset allocation of these low, medium, or high equity as multi-asset funds or balanced funds? So let's take, for example, a high equity fund. Typically, you're going to find that it's got 70 to 75% in equities. It might have 15 to 20% in bonds and about 5% in cash. And using that as the starting point, you can then go and select ETFs or an ETF for each of those asset classes and replicate that in a much lower cost version than going for an actively managed balanced fund or a multi-asset fund. Of course, because your equity component is by far going to be the biggest component of this, I certainly would suggest that one does not just invest in a single equity ETF, like, for example, a South African equity ETF, but that you use this opportunity to also split that between domestic and global. So, you know, select one broad market South African equity ETF, select one nice big global equity ETF, a bond, a government bond ETF, and there's a cash ETF as well, or you can keep the cash just as a normal cash holding in your account. And starting out at that level, so really almost mimicking what a typical asset allocation structure of such a balanced fund would be, you can replicate a big proportion of the returns that will be generated by such a balanced fund purely by using exchange-traded funds. And I think for many investors, especially if you've got a relatively small amount of money to invest, that is a perfectly safe and acceptable way to start out. You know, much like driving a car, you're never going to learn to drive a car if you watch someone else doing it. But if you actually get behind the wheel of the car yourself and you actually start doing so, and you do this in a nicer, sort of safe way, and certainly ETFs is going to be such a safe way for you, you will learn on the job, and there's no better teacher than doing it yourself. Always sort of abdicating the responsibility for your financial decisions and your investment decisions to someone else is not never going to get you to the point where you learn and understand more about your investments yourself. So, you know, if you're in a position where you've got a pension fund or a provident fund at work, or where you've got a big part of your assets already managed by someone else, I encourage people, do take a small part of your money and try it out yourself. Learn by doing, and that certainly is going to empower you with the knowledge that we really want to teach via the investment school. And I want to encourage people that there's nothing to be afraid of, especially if it's a relatively small amount of money, and you can do that with ETFs.
And you can also learn just how flippin' difficult it is, you know, to get it right. and it may help build a little bit of empathy for the professionals in the space. I mean, you know, not too much. You don't want to give them a free pass or anything, but a little bit of empathy, a little bit of understanding is very valuable.
I fully agree, because there's an incredible value to a good financial advisor, but there's also a lot of value in learning to do some of this yourself. And if it results in an increased understanding between yourself and your financial advisor, and as you say, some proper empathy, which is well-founded, I think that you've learned a lot in the process, and it can only stand you in good stead.
Thank you, Nerina Visser. As always, Nerina Visser is an ace communicator in the world of investments. She is a strategist and advisor at ETFSA.